This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to talk now about the challenges of relaunching a career after a long absence from the working world.
It's an issue that cuts across income brackets and gender, particularly in this economy. For example, lost in all the talk about the looming fiscal cliff is the fact that some 2 million long-term unemployed Americans could lose unemployment insurance if those benefits expire, as they're scheduled to, at the end of this year. For them, the pressure to get back to work has never been greater.
Add to that the huge numbers of women who've chosen to take time off to raise children or to look after other family members. According to one study, more than 2 million college-educated mothers are actively interested in getting back to work.
The question is, for both these groups, how? The economy is struggling, competition for good jobs is fierce, and the fast pace of technological change means the job that you had 5 years ago may be totally unrecognizable now. So how do you successfully relaunch a career? And is there something about the American workplace that's making it more difficult to welcome back experienced professionals than it should be? Well, on Thursday, thousands of people asking those very same questions are expected at the iRelaunch Return to Work Conference. It's a major conference here in Boston, and joining us now is one of the organizers of it, Carol Fishman Cohen. She's co-founder of iRelaunch.com and co-author of Back on the Career Track, a guide for stay-at-home moms who want to return to work. Carol Fishman Cohen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Susan Adams. She's senior director of the Center for Women and Business at Bentley University. She will be speaking at this iRelaunch conference on Thursday as well. Professor Adams, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, Carol Fishman Cohen, let me start with you. This isn't something you just wrote a book about on a whim. You've been through this yourself. So tell us what you were doing before you took a break from work, and why did you take that break?
So let's go back to 1985 when I graduated from business school and first worked in manufacturing, and then I switched over into investment banking. And I was working for a company called Drexel Burnham Lambert that I'm guessing some people in the audience might remember. And I was on maternity leave with my first child when Drexel collapsed in February of 1990. So I didn't have the should I go back, shouldn't I go back to work decision to make. There was no company to return to.
Did that extend your time away from work? I mean, had you planned to go back after several months of maternity leave?
Yes, I was planning to go back after a six-month maternity leave. So what happened was I was working for the Boston Corporate Finance Group of Drexel, and they still had a viable business going, even though the parent company collapsed. So they reincorporated. I ended up doing project work for them over the next 5 years while I was having three more children. And then when my fourth child was born, I left the paid workforce entirely, and I began a six-year period at home with my kids, involved in school and community activities. And then in 2001, I was 42 years old. I returned to a demanding full-time job at Bain Capital, the one we've heard so much about in the news, and I stayed there for about a year.
Okay, so but you managed to do what so many people find so difficult today. And Susan Adams, I'm going to turn to you in a moment. But Carol Fishman Cohen, let me ask you: when you finally got that job at Bain, what were the toughest challenges for you to really get back in full time?
So I had to manage things on the home front. My kids were. The youngest was going to kindergarten. The oldest was 11. I had to have some frank conversations with my husband that I wanted him to be the go-to parent while I was working really hard to reestablish myself in this job. On the job side, even before I got the job, I really had to review a lot of financial terms, financial instruments, talk to people I worked with in the past, and really grill them on how things had changed while I was out.
So you did a lot of self-assessment. You sort of did a lot of personal assessment for you and your family, and you did skills assessment as well. I get that. We'll go into all those things in more detail. Did you find it challenging in terms of the employers that you went to say, hey, look, I'm back. I'm ready to work. have me.
Mm-hmm. So I was talking to a whole bunch of people at the same time when this opportunity came up for me to go and speak further with people at Bain. And so I felt the people that I was reestablishing relationships with were actually very encouraging. And that's one of the things we talk to people about is even if your sense of self might have diminished over time because you've taken a career break, the people with whom you went to work or with whom you went to school prior to your career break, they don't know anything about that. They remember you as you were. They have a frozen in time view of you. And it's a source of confidence boosting to get back in touch with these people and hear how enthusiastic they are about your interest in returning.
Okay, well, Susan Adams, you're the senior director of the Center for Women and Business at Bentley University. I wonder what you think about all this, because I was reading over the course of the day that while Carol Fishman Cohen is one of the people who's proven you can make it work, some 50, according to a study from the Wharton Business School, at least 50% of women in particular say they are deeply frustrated when they try and get back into the working world and they don't find it so welcoming.
I think that's the truth for a lot of people. The studies that we've done and that we're seeing here at Bentley shows that a lot of women are having a hard time getting back in because they don't sell themselves well, and companies really don't look at the experience that they've had during the time off as counting at all. That's just a hole in their resumes, and it shouldn't be empty.
Well, and in fact, I mean, I've heard from a lot of women who, I mean, this is a big conversation amongst people my age right now who are maybe thinking about stepping out of the working world, that they worry that they're going to have to spend all this time justifying their decisions when they go back to work.
That is becoming the problem, and one of the reasons why we're thinking about changing the format of one of our programs, the Moms program that we have here at Bentley, because we think that women need to prepare themselves before they leave, not just after.
Mm. Well, listeners, we are talking about the challenges of relaunching your career after time away from work, whether it be by choice or in this economy, not by choice. There's a major conference going on Thursday in Boston called the iRelaunch Return to Work Career that's going to take a look at exactly these questions. So is this you? Have you been out of the working world and are trying to get back in? What have been your greatest challenges so far? Or what have you done that's worked? Have you been able to relaunch that career? Or maybe is the bigger challenge attitudes and perceptions in the American workplace, where stepping away might be equated to dropping out? So employers who are listening, I have a question for you too. Do you welcome the relaunchers, or are they just too expensive and too behind the times? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Carol Fishman Cohen, let me turn back to you. Millions of people are going through this right now. You've written a book about the most important things to get them back on track. So let's draw again from your personal experience here. What in particular do you think you did that was the most helpful when you first decided, I want to go back full time after that 6-year period, for example?
Well, I have to say there are things that I did that were helpful, and also mistakes that I made along the way. But if we talk about the things that were helpful, I would say that I was very actively getting back in touch with people from the past. And those contacts were the first conversations that I had that led to other conversations that ultimately led to job opportunities. So situations that maybe you would shy away from, a school reunion or an annual Christmas party where you're going to see people you worked with 10 years ago, I say make sure you go. Make a point of going, because that's when you're going to be able to rekindle these relationships that you might have let go for a while. So I think that was very helpful. I was also very aggressive about updating myself. I felt that on the technology side, I had to walk in with a certain set of skills, and employers expect a base level of technology knowledge these days. And we talk to other people who are at the beginning of the process about how important this is.
But how do you do that when you're a full-time parent, possibly of multiple kids, maybe you're also taking care of other family members, all the attendant work that goes along with that, and the way that technology is changing moment to moment in this day and age? How do you make time, and how do you know exactly where the next horizon is that you're going to have to meet when you get back to work?
Well, I'd say you need to have a basic knowledge and understanding of Word and Excel and PowerPoint and some understanding of how social media is used. So to learn those things, you know, I live in Newton. There's Newton Community Education. They're teaching these courses there.
Let me press you a little bit on this, because you went back into the world of investments at Bain Capital, right? And finance is just one area in which I think this is a great example. I mean, there are financial products that exist now that didn't exist 6 months ago,
yes,
let alone 6 years ago.
Yes.
So it's not just Microsoft Office we're talking about here.
No.
It's the very nature of the jobs themselves.
And that part of the updating was very hard to do, but it was something that I pushed myself to do. So first of all, just as you said, there were new financial instruments that didn't exist when I was working. There were some that existed when I was working that didn't exist anymore. There were plenty of acronyms I had to learn. I had to review financial analysis formulas. So a lot of this was nitty-gritty, sitting down and reviewing finance books and talking to people in the industry. So I not only knew and reviewed the classic information that I needed to know, but also the new thinking, the new financial instruments, and the new terminology. Mm-hmm. And the other piece of this is that I kind of dropped out of reading the newspaper every day, too, and I let my Wall Street Journal subscription go. So one of the first things I had to do was resubscribe to some of these journals just to know what companies still existed. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go into an interview and talk about a company that didn't exist anymore because it had gone bankrupt or had been renamed or acquired.
Susan Adams, Carol Fishman Cohen is talking about doing a lot of work on her end to stay up to date, to stay relevant, actually, in this day and age. I mean, do you think that that's realistic, or possibly, maybe I'm asking the wrong question, is that the bare minimum now that people have to do in order to prepare themselves to relaunch their careers?
Absolutely. If you want to be competitive at all, you do need to be up to date on everything, because there are so many other people who are, and it's a pretty competitive world out there.
Mm. Now, what about how employers look at all of this? Because over the course of my research today, I kept bumping into articles and studies that found that not all, but many employers look at these experienced workers as, you know, folks, while they might want to have back in the office because they do have so much experience, they see them as an overall cost. Like, it's going to cost them to retrain the workers to do what needs to be done in this day and age. And they might even have too much experience in comparison to, you know, the younger people who are still in the workforce and willing to move around at a lower cost, basically get paid less.
Some of what I've been hearing is that people are worried about having to pay them more because they have more experience, and also more worried about not being able to mold them. Because if they've already had experience, they have their own ways of doing things, and they can't be molded as well as the younger people coming in. So that there is somewhat of an age bias there that's not really being talked about as an age bias, but it is. And that may be coming into play as well.
Carol Fishman Cohen, do you see that there is this employer bias against quote unquote dropouts, that's all they see, that you just haven't been in work for a while?
You know, it really depends on the employer. And some of them have an age bias, or some of them have concerns around being technologically obsolete, being not sure about what they want to do. But we say, if you think about the other side of it, think about the life stage of people who are coming off of career break. Fewer maternity leaves, fewer spousal relocations, a more mature perspective, people who are not sweating the small stuff, and great experience. And they're not all in there trying to get top dollar either. They know that they're going to have to pay some price for the time that they've been out of the workforce.
Mm. Listeners, we're talking about the challenges of relaunching your career after time outside of work, whether it be by choice or not. There's a major conference in Boston coming up later this week about this. So we want to hear your stories. Have you spent time outside of work, and what did it take to get you back on track with your career? Are you glad you did it or not? And employers who are listening out there, would you welcome these experienced folks who may have stepped outside of the working world for a few years? Or do you see them as more cost than benefit? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a couple calls here. Marjorie's calling from Chelmsford. You're on the air, Marjorie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm one of those people that took a career break to first raise my children, and then I have a child with special needs, and I stay home to work with him. And I would just like to share this little wisdom piece with my peers who are struggling to get back into the market, that all the while I was home, I did two things. One is I continued to work part-time at almost no money just to keep current, and in fact became a cyber tutor, which, you know, kept me up to date with the technology changes as well as the population changes in my field. So that now, coming back into the workforce of 50-something, I have up-to-date skills and up-to-date ideas on who I will be teaching. And I can't stress that enough for people who make the choice to stay home with their children, that there is a bias against those who do that. So to stack the thing in your favor, you know, do something, even if it pays next to nothing, just to keep up to date.
Marjorie, thank you so much for your call. I want to bring in another guest into this conversation to react to that and also to continue talking with Carol Fishman-Cohen and Susan Adams. Her name is Julie Mathai. She's a professor of economics at Wellesley College. Professor Mathai, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So what is it that you're hearing in this conversation? Because so far, what's interested me the most is that it seems that a lot of people are talking as if the majority of the responsibility to make a person ready to get back to work, and this makes a lot of sense to me, falls on the individual. I mean, would you agree on that, or do you think there's a bigger challenge here that we haven't quite hit head on?
Well, I really think from a larger perspective, we have to think of a society as how we get our caring labor done, and that we need to start valuing it more, and we need to be like other Western countries who have done a lot more in terms of allowing people to combine paid work and unpaid work in the home. So we're like the last of, you know, almost the last of 178 countries in the world with no paid leave whatsoever, and whereas other countries like Canada have 50 weeks of paid leave. So I think part of it is a kind of psychological issue of we have a culture, as people were saying, that really doesn't value unpaid work in the home and thinks of someone, a man or a woman, who takes time off to do that important work as somebody who's not serious about their work, someone who's losing their edge and who has nothing to contribute. So I do think we have to think of it, first of all, in this larger way and say, of course, as a society, not only should we be supporting people to take time off to do caring work, but as you said, we should be helping them retrain and get into the economy, which is a problem for a lot of our unemployed people, because we have such quick, rapid technological change.
Is that realistic, though, given the rapid pace of change? I mean, month to month, there are some industries that just aren't the same.
Right. Well, I think it's a question of putting our priorities on taking care of the people rather than just a narrow profit-motivated or GDP-growing focus. That has been the way many economists have looked. If you look at well-being, if people don't have jobs, they don't have well-being. So we should be trying to shift the goals, the general whole economic goals of firms, be encouraging firms to maintain and retain workers and find ways to retrain workers and not just, you know, ship them abroad, for example. I mean, President Obama was talking a lot about in the campaign about this issue of moving jobs to China and encouraging firms to keep jobs here. Well, it's the same kind of an idea to try to encourage production in a way that actually retains jobs, which are extremely valuable for people.
Well, Carol,
and then you talk about these women who are doing this hard work of caring for their children and being put, you know, extremely discriminated against.
Carol Fishman-Cohen, let me ask you about that, because you actually have sort of a whole variety of experience when it comes to this. It wasn't just that sort of hard relaunch you did after the 6 years that you took care of your children. I heard you say earlier that you were doing some sort of part-time work after your first child was born. I mean, did that work for you? I mean, was it doable?
Well, it just evolved. I can't say that I was strategizing about it. I just knew that the company was there and they were doing project work and they asked me if I'd be involved and I wanted to be involved. So it just kind of worked out without me really thinking it through. But I think to this point about doing some sort of strategic volunteering work, taking a course that has a field study attached to it that gets you out working in a company, or doing some sort of an internship, a short-term non-binding job opportunity with an employer, are all ways that people can test a working relationship without having an employer to make a permanent commitment to hire the person right at the beginning.
Are we seeing more of that is my question. Are employers starting to sort of open their minds more in thinking about maybe instead of that straight full-time job, other models by which to ease the transition back to work? Or maybe, as Julie Mathai was pointing out, not even having someone leave work completely and having some sort of soft relaunch instead?
Right. Well, one of the things that we do at iRelaunch is we track all the return to work programs that are going on across sectors, the government, foundations, nonprofit, employers. We call it the comprehensive list of career reentry programs worldwide. And some of them are programs that are just an event. Some of them are internship programs where people come in and work for a 3-month or a 6-month period, and they may or may not get hired. Some of them are connected with university programs, and there are a whole range of different ways people can engage while they're on career break. So we're seeing, I'd say, we have 89 programs that are listed now that have run at least once. Before 2004, we only had 16. So we're seeing an explosion of return to work programs. Mm-hmm. But some are continuing, some are not continuing. I can give you some examples.
Well, hold that thought for just a moment, because I do want to get in at least one more call here. Sheena is calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Sheena.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's your thought?
Well, I actually just finished my first day of work after staying home to raise my daughter. She's now 14 months old. And I kind of had to learn to open up my parameters in terms of what kind of work I was going to be able to find, knowing that I had taken that time and that I had also been in school before that, so it was even a longer employment gap. And I was fortunate enough to find a job that I am enthusiastic about. And in taking this job, I'm thinking about the big picture in terms of how those skills could be applicable to my dream job one day.
So tell me a little bit more about that, Sheena. I mean, so it's not your dream job today, but before you left the working world, were you closer to your dream job than you are now?
I think I am, yes, because I took some time. I did some unpaid internships. I went to fashion school. I did unpaid internships. I've done, contract work when I can. And I found a job that I'm enthusiastic about and I'm excited to go to at a photography studio. And I'll be doing some things that I'm going to be using skills that I acquired in school. But it's not in my direct industry, but I had to kind of just open my mind up to accepting kind of other types of jobs so that I could maintain myself in the workforce and so that I would have something on my resume and, just keep myself involved in going to a job every day.
Sheena, thank you so much for your call. Susan Adams, let me bring you back in here. I think Sheena's story is one that might ring a lot of very true or familiar to a lot of people out there, that you have to make sort of immediate term sacrifices in order to achieve that long-term goal of getting your career fully back on track. But I keep coming back to this notion, and I've seen the studies about this that say it's those exact immediate sacrifices on top of having been outside the working world for a period of months to years that overall makes it less likely that people are going to achieve that dream job. I mean, it just once you get off the conveyor belt of an American career, it's really hard to get back on completely.
Yes, that is true. If you want to stay on that same trajectory, what I'm seeing, though, is that a lot of people are just completely shifting gears. Sounds like Carol changed her field a good bit, and I completely shifted gears and went to a totally different field when my kids were little, because as I started doing some of this volunteer work and trying to do other things, I realized that, hey, there's more out there than I thought I might enjoy. Mm. And we're seeing an explosion of women-led home businesses now. And I think that has a lot to do with people wanting to stay in the workforce, but doing it on their own terms.
Mm-hmm. Carol Fishman-Cohen, quick thought from you?
Yes, we make career decisions at a very young age. We might fall into a major in school, take a job out of school, and if you take another job in that same field, the next thing you know, you have a career. So many of us are go in that career that the career break is actually a gift. It's the first time that we have the chance to step back and analyze whether we were even on the right career path to begin with. And some of us are very fortunate. We were on exactly the right one to begin with. We returned to exactly what we left. Others of us loved what we were doing before, but maybe there was spontaneous travel requirements or 24/7 accountability. Mm-hmm. We're going to return to something that's similar.
I'm sorry to jump in here, but yes. I'm looking at the clock and yes. I've just got a couple seconds to go. And there is a question that's pressing on my mind that I have to ask.
Yes.
Baked in the cake of our conversation so far was, I think the assumption that we're talking about a certain group of men and women who are college educated and were working in, certain professions. But relaunching a career is something that applies to people, across the board, regardless of what sector of the working world they were in. I'm thinking, nurses, teachers, anyone in a service industry. It must be harder in those other fields to relaunch, or do you think that they should follow the same advice that you've been giving to anybody?
We work with people in a huge range of fields, whether they're technical fields and they've been out of them for a long time, or nursing or teaching, and we've seen success stories in every single one. It has to do with updating skills, being very relentless about going after exactly what you want to do, and we've seen people being successful in all sectors.
Carol Fishman-Cohen is co-founder of iRelaunch.com and co-author of Back on the Career Track. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Susan Adams, Senior Director of the Center for Women and Business at Bentley University, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And Julie Mathai, Professor of Economics at Wellesley College, pleasure to have you on the program today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And listeners, there is the big iRelaunch conference in Boston on Thursday. You can find more information about that at radioboston.org. Stay with us because coming up, we'll talk about love, faith, and other dirty words. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.